Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Good morning. This is John Williams. I'll be here till noon. That's my shift weekdays on social media, WGN King John. Hope you're doing well. Gosh, I'm in a chipper mood. I was at the Wintrust Arena last night for the DePaul game. I've become a bit of a Big East basketball fan. I follow Butler pretty closely, and DePaul this year, I have season tickets, and it's just been brutal the last couple of months. They lose all of their games, and it's just been so discouraging. They started out 12-1, then went like 1-12. That's hard to do. And then last night, they beat Steve Bertrand's. I mean, they beat Marquette. Bertrand has nothing to do with it. I actually don't want to beat Steve Bertrand's team. And I could not believe, as I was sitting there, that we pulled that thing off. Incidentally, at one point during the game, I got up during intermission to use the restroom. And while I was washing my hands, I sang this song.
So bye-bye, Miss American.
Standing there,
Pie,
rinsing my hands.
My Chevy too.
You know, you're supposed to do it for 20 seconds. And so I was going, and good old boys
were drinking whiskey and rye, singing this'll be the day that I die.
Kind of echoes in the men's room, by the way.
This'll be the day that I die.
Some fathers were ushering their sons over to the other part of the restroom as I was carrying on. Not an especially good singer, and it was frightening to some in there. But that got me to my 20-second rinse. So what a nice little thing we did yesterday, sing Happy Birthday twice or sing the chorus to American Pie.
Okay, I have to admit.
What's that?
I was humming to myself Happy Birthday twice.
As long as you do. I'm just trying to make it easier. Back into the newsroom, Steve Grzanich.
We have some breaking news from the race for president. Mike Bloomberg has just ended his bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, and he has endorsed Joe Biden. A stunning collapse by the former New York City mayor, who had pinned his 2020 hopes on Super Tuesday last night, spent more than $500 million from his own fortune in what was an unsuccessful night across many states. He has issued a statement this morning saying, I'm a believer in using data to inform decisions. After yesterday's results, the delegate math has become virtually impossible, and a viable path to the nomination no longer exists. Mike Bloomberg is out of the race for president.
Evidently, the data he was interested in did not include how much money he was spending. Producer Olive, how much did he spend on his TV campaign?
$410 million on television ads alone, John.
He spent 400, and he went into the race late. He wasn't even on the first two ballots. $410 million. I'm all for capitalism, but if you've got that much money to blow in a couple of weeks on TV ads for a campaign you can't win, maybe you've got too much money.
And this may not be the only announcement today, John. Elizabeth Warren, we're now being told, has been huddling with her campaign team this morning, trying to determine if there is a path forward for her campaign as well. The Massachusetts senator lost her own state yesterday in Super Tuesday.
The president tweeted that she's being selfish, so much for the liberal love between her and Bernie. Said Donald Trump, I didn't know that they had a lot of liberal love between the two of them, but it did look like, and may be true, that the Democrats Party was, I'll say, conspiring. I don't mean that so sinisterly, but conspiring to not let Bernie win the nomination, but rather help Joe Biden win the nomination. And if Warren was still on the ticket, then maybe she splits with Bernie Sanders some of those very liberal votes, and Joe Biden is seen as more mainstream. That's what the market's reacting to. Am I right about that, Steve Grzanich?
Well, partially reacting to that. I think the markets are also sort of, after taking yesterday and having a breather overnight a little bit, that they're settling down some. But I think the markets like the fact that a moderate seems to be the front runner now again. They were, you know, a lot of investors were really, really concerned about what Bernie Sanders would do, not only to the stock market, but to business in general across the country.
Isn't it interesting the things the market reacts to? Here, you always thought it was sort of a measure of the fundamental values of companies, but if somebody gets sick in China, then we drop 10%. That has an economic impact. I'm not ignoring that fact, but I think fear and emotion have a lot to do with these sort of things. Why do you think Orion quotes the VIX? And then Joe Biden looks like he might win, and the corporate world thinks, well, if we have a moderate, not a Loon Tunes liberal, and I'm not even picking one of those horses. I'm just saying that's the perception. Then maybe it's better, and zing, the market goes up.
Incidentally, and, wait just a couple of hours, it could go back down again.
I know.
You just never know.
Never mind. Never mind. I didn't ask. By the way, yesterday, Dave Ennett, WGN Radio Sports, told us that Dallas Keuchel for the White Sox made how much money? What's his contract worth, Dave? It's like $11 zillion?
Well, close to that. 3 years, $55 million-ish.
He took everybody out for a steak dinner the other night in Arizona?
Yes.
Just like a 150 people?
Yeah.
And what did the bill come to?
$25,000.
And then you're like, wow, that's amazing. But then you go, well, he makes $51 million. So that's equivalent to him picking up fries for the rest of us. And then you said, well, maybe, John, when did you buy? I says, well, I don't have $50 million. But if it was dollars to donuts, I would be buying Subway for you guys. That would be the equivalent gesture. Mm-hmm. Hey, Dave, look what I brought.
You brought Subway.
And you said yesterday you like tuna.
I do like tuna.
6-inch wheat Subway tuna sandwich here, my friend.
For me?
With an oatmeal raisin cookie.
Really?
Steve Grzanich, I don't know what your sandwich is, but I know you're kind of being careful these days. I got you the turkey breast with vegetables.
That's nice. That fits right into my diet.
Mary Vandeveld, I don't know if you want tuna or the Italian, but I've got that.
Ooh, I'd go tuna.
Tuna for you? Elif, I'm not sure if you're a breakfast sandwich eater, but you can have the Italian, the turkey, or the tuna. We have chocolate chip cookies as well. The total bill came to about $18, which is $25,000 to me, were I Dallas Keuchel. So,
John, thank you.
John? Wow.
It's a really grand gesture.
It really was. Could I ask you a question?
No.
Were those sandwiches refrigerated before you came in here?
They were not, and I'm sorry that you asked that, what with us all being health conscious now, but they have not been outside those moderately cool coolers that they have on display at the Subway for very long. I picked these up this morning on my way in.
So they'd be safe to
you. I put them in the producer bay over there where the temperature is a comfortable 93 today. I don't know if you noticed that.
It's so warm.
That should be fine.
Because tuna, there's nothing in tuna that could go bad, is there?
In this world right now, I think warm tuna is the least of your problems.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the chocolate chip cookie's going to melt.
What would you rather do, have a warm tuna sandwich or go play basketball in Seattle? Chicago State has canceled their games, and they're not going to host teams coming from the West either.
Well, the men's team had two games scheduled this week out West to wrap up the Western Athletic Conference schedule. And their women's team had two games at home against the same two schools that the men's team was going to be playing out West. And those would have been held at the Jones Convocation Center on the Chicago State campus. They canceled those two games.
Saw an NBC report online today, and they described parts of Seattle as a ghost town. That kind of video you've seen out of China, they have that in malls in some places in Seattle right now. Everything is about perspective. I mean, you say, well, my God, of course you can't go to Seattle. Guess, you know who's in Seattle right now? Washingtonians. People from Seattle are in Seattle. They're walking around. They're going to school. Mm-hmm. They're doing things that people do, and they're surviving it. I'm glad I'm not in a position to make the decision because I'm a little more fear be damned, all speed ahead. And I guess I get to be that way if I'm only thinking about myself. If I was thinking about a team or 60,000 people at the McCormick Place, maybe I'd have to think differently. But I still think that we don't have a sense of perspective on all of this. I think we are overreacting. I mean, put it this way. I think we are reacting to the coronavirus in Seattle the way people from Washington might think about the shootings in Chicago. In each case, they say, wow, is it safe to be there? There's plenty of people who don't want to come to Chicago, and it's not because of the virus. And we've been fighting this fight forever. I would feel very comfortable flying to Seattle right now.
Yeah, I would have no problem going. But I also understand people who would be reluctant to do it.
I guess you could say, well, if you don't want to go on the trip, you don't have to, and sign a waiver. But I don't suppose that's a good way for a school to treat their student athletes.
Well, and that's one of the points they made, is this is out of concern for their student athlete, not just their student athlete, but the university community.
We'll visit with a reporter from Washington State in a little while. He'll tell us in the next half hour what's going on out there and what it is like. By the way, we'll also visit with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. He joins us on Wednesdays. I went to Harbor Restaurant again, 1312 South Wabash. It's kind of a place I go to on my way to these basketball games at Wintrust Arena. It's not that far from there. They have the best Manhattan in the city. I'm telling you, I've had a few Manhattans in my day. They've got a really good one there. You know what the cab ride was from here? We are, you know, on the river near Michigan Avenue, say, to almost to Wintrust Arena. It was $8.50. Do you know what the Lyft ride would have been? $18.
Really?
$18. I saw that on my phone and said, I'm taking a cab. It was $8.50. It's funny how that works.
But what time of day? Was it 5 o'clock in the afternoon?
It was, yeah. Yeah. So it's 9:28. News is coming up. Who's the king, presidentially speaking, of the gaffe, of the malapropism?
Everybody knows it'd be George Bush.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Don't you miss him now?
I love Meryl Streep in the flick, One True Thing. I love traffic, I love the colors, yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
Carol, you're on WGN. Hi, Carol.
So your conversation about, you know, people contradicting themselves. There's a wonderful poem by our great American poet, Walt Whitman. It starts out, I contain multitudes. Do I contradict myself? Very well. I contradict myself. I contain multitudes. So I always think about that when I contradict myself.
940, this is WGN. We got smart listeners out there, don't we? And that's you. We always appreciate you tuning in.
What a dream, like we're scientists.
You can always call 312-981-7200. You can text to that line, too. We've been talking about life in Seattle. It is different today. A reporter will join us in about 10 minutes. Julie wanted to say something about that. Hey, Julie, you're on WGN. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm fine.
What do you know?
I know that a friend of mine's daughter works at Amazon in Seattle and was contemplating coming into Chicago for a visit. And their policy is if you travel, you do not return to work until 2 weeks after you've returned to Seattle.
Even if you come to Chicago?
Yep.
So
any travel.
Wow. Because maybe she'll pick it up when her travels, bring it back there to their plant, and they can't have that.
Correct.
So a 3-day vacation, a long weekend in Chicago is 3 days plus 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes.
I suppose they don't charge them for that. They still get paid for the 2 weeks that they ask them to quarantine themselves?
Do you know, I didn't ask that question, and I assumed the opposite. I assumed you got paid for your vacation, but not for your quarantine time.
It's funny, though, because will they quarantine themselves or will they go to Chicago, pick up whatever germs we've got here, and then they're going to go to the mall or whatever it is they do in Seattle? I mean, I guess it really is only protecting the plant and the fellow workers. That's all you can do, huh?
Yes, wow. That is all they can do, and that's what they're concerned about, I presume, is their staff.
Fascinating. Okay, Julie, thanks for the phone call.
Have a good one, John.
Yeah, have a good day. We appreciate you tuning in to WGN Radio. Yeah, we'll visit with a reporter out there in just a little bit. By the way, you know that business of the gaffes that the presidential candidates make? I mean, Joe Biden's been getting beat up about it because he says things that are just real word salads these days. And you all talk amongst yourselves about, does that mean anything other than sometimes he jumbles his words? You and I wonder that about ourselves sometimes. We can't recall something or we say something. We go, okay, that's it. Cart me off. I'm done. It's over. Can't do it anymore. But we've had presidents, and we have a president, who are capable of things that are hard to decipher. I don't have time for all of them, but here's a few highlights.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the... Go, you know the thing.
Okay. But we're already living with this, right?
This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings.
The kidney has a very special place in the heart. It's an incredible thing.
It's one of my favorites. One of my favorites. And then, of course, the
there's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once.
Come on, George, you can do it.
Come on. Shame on you.
Come on, buddy.
If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
And we survived all of that. So I think you can always text or call. We like it when you do. I hope you do as well. 312-981-7200. John, I'm considering the fact that $1 billion and Bloomberg spent $500 million. A billion, John, is $1,000 million. John, you didn't get those guys footlongs? I bought half footlongs for the staff this morning. That was my nod.
Thank you for that. That was very kind of you.
Sorry I didn't get you one, Steve. I was thinking more pre... No, I'm sorry. I should have got you one.
You want 3 inches of mine?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
John, I predict Warren will drop out but will not endorse Biden. We're getting lots of speculations there. And about traveling to Seattle, hey, John, I'm afraid to go to Chicago. And the funny part is I live in Chicago. You've been following this story. So the numbers include these, 9 and 26 deaths and those infected in the United States. And at one nursing home of the 9 deaths, I believe 7 of them are from that one facility. Hannah Scott is a reporter at KIRO Radio in Seattle. Hannah, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Tell me a little bit about what the top of your stories are today. What's the big news right now?
Oh, the big news is, well, testing actually is what's really, really the big news. It kind of the lack of capacity to test as many people who want to get tested. We're seeing people who have mild symptoms that could be flu or cold, but who are concerned that they may have been exposed to this virus now that we've seen the spread so ramp up so much over the last couple of days, that they're, you know, going to their doctor's offices or their urgent cares, and those doctors don't have a They can't test, and we've got a tent we're hearing set up outside one of the hospitals here, where people are going to doctors trying to get tested, and they can't do anything for them. And what we're hearing from our state public health officials is that we really only have the capacity to test close to 100 people a day here right now, and there's many more than that who want to be tested. So they're trying to ramp up testing capabilities here at our state level. Our state legislature is trying to do emergency funding, and then also in Congress, they're trying to get something passed to make sure there's plenty of testing, not just for here in Washington state, but for all of the other states as well.
Hannah, I think that is so interesting. I mean, I didn't think that the story would, I didn't think you'd be saying that. And we don't have the outbreak that you do, but we also like to think we're prepared. And I wonder if Chicago and Illinois residents and the mayor and the governor here have had press conferences extolling the virtues of our preparedness, and I believe them. I think we've got our act together here. The first two cases were people from Chicago. So, you know, we're very acutely aware of the need to be ready here. But wow, that's amazing that suddenly everybody wants to get tested rather than treated. They just want to get tested.
Isn't the concern there, though, that this virus has been hanging around for a lot longer than we thought?
Yes, absolutely. So we have a geneticist here, a scientist who's with the Seattle Flu Study, who looked at the very first U.S. case. That was a man who had been to Wuhan, China, who January 15th or so was when they identified him. And he, you know, again, had been to China. But then close to 6 weeks later, in the very same county where he was identified, a teenager was identified. And that was just this last Friday, who had a strain that is essentially a descendant from that first case, which in science speak means, yes, that was lurking around, spreading around, community spread, right? So not that's the big concern, community spread, where it just passes through droplets and everything else, that has been going on for 6 weeks undetected. So the numbers are going to go up. We don't have the numbers right now because we have such limited testing capacity.
Well, how is it that you all were so unprepared for that? I mean, I would imagine you have a lot of Asian visitors, given where you are and you're an international city. How is it that you weren't prepared more for this?
for this. And I mean, they have, there have been flights canceled from China at our SeaTac airport here for several weeks now. I think they're taking some stepped up measures now that they just announced yesterday. But I think they felt that they had this under control. There was no real concern about community spread, at least not that was made public. And then this information came out, and you can really tell as the numbers have gone up. I was at back press conferences Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, every day with more community spread and the numbers going up and the deaths going up. And of course, most of the deaths, as you mentioned, are at that nursing facility in a Seattle suburb where, you know, we have elderly people with underlying health conditions who live there. And seven of them at least have passed away now. And that is really kind of ground zero for what's happening. But we have a case in North Carolina identified yesterday as a person who came to visit someone at that facility who got community spread.
Well, then maybe the fact that the Chicago State basketball team isn't going to go to Seattle makes sense, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, it makes sense. And we're starting to see, just in the last 24 hours, a lot of our large events being canceled. The same geneticist who concluded that that case of the teenager and that original case are connected and that community spread has been going on for several weeks also just came out yesterday and said that this is a critical point for the Seattle area. This is the juncture where Wuhan was at January 1st, and at about 10 weeks after January 1st, that's when they saw in Wuhan an explosion of cases. So we here in Seattle would be about 3 weeks away from that. So right now they're saying, you know, do all of the hand washing and don't touch your face and all of that, but perhaps start to limit your interactions with other people. Don't go to large group gatherings. They're not saying we have to do that yet. And it's mostly recommended for people over 60 with underlying health conditions, but we could be a day or so away from seeing perhaps a stronger recommendation about that.
Hannah Scott's a reporter with KIRO Radio in Seattle. Are people mad at the politicians or the city leaders, or do they understand that there's nothing you all could have done to prevent this?
People are frustrated, and I'll tell you who some of the most frustrated people are: our parents. We have had a couple of cases. Well, the teen identified last Friday, a student at a local high school. They closed that high school down. It was a weekend when we found out, so they cleaned it thoroughly for 3 days, closed it on Monday again to make sure they had plenty of time to clean it. But then we have another high school in the same county where one of the deaths was connected to a kid who goes to that school. So they shut down on Monday or Tuesday. And now we've got parents' petitions all over from various school districts, specifically in Snohomish County, just to the north of Seattle, with thousands of parents calling on the districts to close the schools because they are afraid, not just that their kids might get sick and have their own health issues, but because it can spread the way that it does. If you have anyone who has underlying health conditions and a higher risk kind of category in your life, in your family, in your home, then the child who gets it could come home and transmit it, and it would, you know, be very, very severe for that other person who has those conditions. So there's a bit of a, I wouldn't call it panic, but we might be getting there. Our state officials are going to meet today about education recommendations and what people should do. We already have a private school who's shut down and is only going to teach remotely until at least mid-April.
I got 60 seconds left, Hannah. Can you tell me more about that? I saw a picture of a mall in your town, and it looked empty. Is it kind of ghosty there right now?
It's not as ghosty as where you'd look at it and think, you know, the apocalypse is here kind of a thing. But certainly with each day that has passed, we're seeing less and less people out. Some of our transit seems to be a little less filled than it normally is. And yeah, I haven't seen a lot of people at the malls, but you don't always. And we, over the weekend, had so many Costco and all of these big stores bought out of everything. You can't find hand sanitizer or anything like that here.
Do you guys take phone calls? Are you a talk station as well? And what are you hearing from your listeners?
Concern, and again, concern mostly about the testing and the lack of ability to get testing and a lack of direction. We weren't getting all of the information about the testing, the good recommendations for people with mild symptoms until really today.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. I really appreciate your time. Good luck to you out there, and we'll call upon you again, Hannah. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Anytime.
Hannah Scott is a reporter with KIRO Radio in Seattle. John, a reason for some of Joe Biden's gaffes. Here's an article from the Stuttering Foundation. Yeah, I think we forget sometimes that he's been a lifelong stutterer. Comes and goes, sometimes more pronounced than others. I honestly forgot that. John, I do not agree with George Bush often, but I really like that guy's personality. John, if Mike Bloomberg pooled all of the money he spent on his campaign, he could literally buy American Samoa, which was part of Super Tuesday.
Well, I just feel badly that the Samoans have been disenfranchised.
WGN, hi, it's John Williams. Good restaurant news and views and reviews. Phil Vitale says hi in a half an hour. I was pleased to, or just, I don't know if I was happy about it, but I have to laugh at all of the details about the Casey Urlacher story, the mayor of a little town called Matawa.
Looks like Metawa, but I think they pronounce it Matawa there.
Yeah. Is that around here, Matawa?
Yeah, it's right between like sort of Vernon Hills and Lake Forest, and it's right off the tri-state.
And I'm sorry, Steve, you did that story. What was the headline there?
He and others are charged with running an offshore gambling ring in Costa Rica.
Don't. Maybe they didn't do it, but if they did, you dopes. You see the headline in the Sun-Times the other day when the story first broke?
What was it?
I mean, they got a whole team of people. The Sun-Times, I think the Sun-Times is a terrific newspaper, Tribune, terrific newspaper. Sun-Times wins the headlines all the time. Casey at the bet. You get it? He was betting. He was running a betting thing. His name is Casey. Casey at the bet. Headline, Sun-Times. After that, you don't care. You just say, thank you. That's worth 75 cents. Lots of text today. John, the coronavirus is having a huge effect on our economy here in Chicago. My son, who's 2 months into his dream event planning job with Marriott, was told yesterday that Marriott has had several large events cancel, leading to the company needing to lay off employees until this coronavirus clears and the events reschedule. They had a huge system-wide meeting and said they are losing millions. A friend of ours here at the radio station has a local business you've heard of, and he said that so far his company has lost contracts worth $350,000. John, get ready for Biden Klobuchar. John, if Mike Bloomberg is worth $60 billion and he spent $500 million on his campaign, that would be like you and I spending 50 cents if we had $60 to our name. Okay, so
it turns out we do.
50 cents to 60. But if you got 60 bucks, you shouldn't be blowing 50 cents. But the point is, you know, what gets lost here is, but in that world where you only have $60, which is the equivalent of his $60 billion, you can live on a penny for the rest of your life, right? So $60 is an enormous fortune when you spend 50 cents. Producer Olive, did you find it? What is Mike Bloomberg worth?
$55.4 billion, John.
$55.4 billion. I don't know, does he have heirs? Are they like, Dad, really? What? But it doesn't matter because you can't spend $50 billion on a campaign. It wouldn't work, it sounds like, if you did. I mean, with unlimited resources. He spent $410 million on TV ads, and some of his stuff was pretty good. It was slick. It made the point really well. But he didn't have enough. John, do you think this coronavirus thing is getting ridiculous? Yes. John, also, Biden deals with stuttering. He has reason to jumble his words. Yeah, a few of you are reminding us of that. And when we played some of the gaffes of the current president and past presidents, I did not include any from Obama or Clinton. To be honest with you, when you search Bill Clinton gaffes, you find him saying things like, I did not have relations with that young woman, or it depends on what the definition of is. Clinton was not known for misspeaking. He was known for not telling you the truth, but he was not known for throwing out the kind of word salads that Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Mayor Daley used to. John, ask Obama how many states there are in the United States. He once famously said 57 as a joke. He was talking about how weary he was and all the places he traveled. And people who do not like Barack Obama still want to believe that he did not know how many states there are. John, I was on a flight from Phoenix yesterday. The plane was larger than what was originally booked, and the seats did not line up, so there was confusion during the boarding process. Anyway, while waiting in the aisle, I chatted with a flight attendant and commented how you could really smell the cleaning solvents people were using. Her comment back to me shocked me. She said, yes, the plane had a deep clean as it was pulled from Asian service. So I flew on a plane that had been running back and forth from China the past few months. I wish I had been given a choice.
Well, that's interesting because they're doing that. Some of the wide-body planes that, that are being idled by the China, you know,
yeah,
flights, and to make people more comfortable here, and to, you know, to keep those pilots up in the air. So instead of feeling more comfortable, this person was upset that they might have caught the disease.
Yeah.
Hey, John, another event has been canceled due to the coronavirus.
What's going on, Mary Vandeville?
The fight for air climb.
Oh, you're
here
kidding.
Here at Presidential Towers. Yes, it was canceled this morning.
Shoot. That
Were
is
you
an event.
Signed up? No, you didn't.
I did, and then I told him I wasn't going to go, and then I said, okay, I'll go.
I was going to do it last minute.
I was, yeah. too.
Yeah, well, they might reschedule.
Well, I wasn't going to do it.
Oh, now. Oh, I get it. Sure.
No, Presidential Towers made the decision to cancel the year's event, so they just announced it this morning.
Jeannie McGrory here, Maureen McDonald, members of our staff work long and hard for months on that, along with the American Lung Association. It's a great event. Maybe just go to their website and give them $100 because it goes to a good place.
Now, now they're saying we are unable to reschedule the 2020 event because of the size and scope of the event.
That's
when public health concerns subside, you will receive an invite to a celebration to recognize you and the efforts of funding, you know, fundraising you've done already.
No kidding.
So,
hold on, Steve.
Okay.
We'll pick it up here in a minute. It's 10:14. Steve, you and I were just talking a little bit about the coronavirus, how it's impacting people around the world, including Chicago. Chicago State basketball teams not traveling to Washington for games. They're not hosting teams from out west. Mary Vandeveld just told us that the fight for air climb and the presidential towers scheduled for Sunday is not going to happen now.
Yeah, that's, and you know, everyone's got to make up their own mind, I guess. You know, I'm not going to criticize them for making that decision. I kind of understand the UIC trip. Why would you take a trip into an area that's been impacted as directly as Seattle has? That makes sense to me.
John, speaking of the virus, we are scheduled for a trip to Disney World at the end of April. It's known for many visitors from Asia and Europe, especially in the spring, wondering what precautions they are taking with foreign guests coming in. This trip is a gift from our daughter. I don't know the answer to that. Elif looked on their website, Disney World's website, and they don't have anything posted there about precautions they're taking. Obviously, it's up and running still, although the Disney properties in Asia, and there's several of them, are closed. Shut down for the one in China indefinitely, the one in Japan, there's two of them, for a couple of weeks, starting February 29th. Not until the middle of March are they scheduled to reopen. So I don't know what Disney World in Orlando is doing.
But they're completely unrelated, right? I mean, the Chinese Disney properties are in an area that where the flu is much more dangerous.
Have you been listening to your news, Steve? People travel from other places to these places, and that's how the pathogen gets spread.
Okay, but I mean,
hey, I'm with you completely. I'm with you completely.
Has there been a single case in Florida?
You know what I would do? I would go to Disney World right now because I don't think the crowds will be as big as they are in other springs. I mean, seriously, that's where my head is. Dan's in, Dan is online too. Hey, Dan, you're on WGN.
You know, I got to say, Bloomberg's got to be laughing because these tax cuts that Trump gave him probably funded this whole thing anyway.
That's pretty funny.
But the beauty of it is he got what he wanted, and that's to, you know, have a candidate in there that can beat him. The turn of events from Saturday to today, really, it's just phenomenal. You could do civics classes, and there are going to be books written about it, and the backroom dealings. You know, Obama's had something to do with it. I mean, it is breathtaking. It's democracy at its finest. People got up. They went out and voted. They didn't need ads or people knocking on their doors or any of that. I mean, the grassroots effort of this country should be intimidating to anybody looking to go against this. This was just a tremendous surge of people just saying, we've had enough. They waited 5.5 hours in line. They did what they had to do to get their vote heard, and it goes beyond Joe Biden. This is just a clear-cut message. We've had enough. Yeah. And if I were Trump and the GOP and those down-ballot guys, senators, I would be terrified right now.
Okay. Dan, interesting points, all of them. Thank you for the call.
It's a good argument also against vote for mail, early voting, I think.
Yeah,
even
right.
Though that's not popular.
You never know what's going to happen.
Right. I mean, you know, just think of the way this momentum changes, and it has been historic. Well, how different it might be had people not voted in California 2 weeks ago.
This is a silly way to measure these things, but Sam Panionovich is on line three. Hey, Sam, are you there?
Why is it silly?
because you're not a political analyst, and I don't even want to do a political show, but you follow wagering. Sam Panionovich is frequently in our studio talking about the odds on the Super Bowl or something like that. But lately he's been feeding me with what these prop bets are, if you will, on political candidates. And didn't you say like a week ago, Sam, that Bernie Sanders, for people spending their money, was the odds on favorite? Joe Biden was an 8-1, right?
He was 10-1 2 weeks ago. So a $100 bet on Joe Biden. And you can do this legally in the UK. It's very popular at a place like Ladbrokes. Where they just actually put up new odds to win the Democratic nomination and the presidential election. This is something that's very popular, not only in the UK, but in a lot of the Costa Rica and Nicaragua markets. But yeah, if you go back 2 weeks, you and I had this conversation, I think on the 21st of February, Joe Biden was 10-1, and he was behind three people on the betting sheets. You had Bernie Sanders at about plus 100, 100 wins 100. Bloomberg was 4-1, 100 won 400. Jeez. And then Mayor Pete, I think, was 8-1. Then it was Biden at 10-1. But now, for the first time in a Democratic convention, I guess you can call it a convention, we have a clear-cut favorite. Joe Biden is now as high as minus 450, which means now to win that 100, you have to put 450 on the counter just to win 100. So that is a drastic shift in just a matter of about 2 weeks.
So that doesn't strike me as requiring a great amount of brilliance to even 2 weeks ago think the vice president still had a shot. And it would have been a reasonable bet. And wow, would you have made money on that today if the trend continues? Why didn't you tell me 2 weeks ago, Sam, to put $100 on Biden?
Well, I would never advise you to do any such thing. I would never advise you to make an illegal bet on a political race. But that being said, how about this? You look at all the names that moved out of the way, right? Because when these ads opened up, this was something that you could have bet on months ago. We're going back 4 or 5 months, and the pecking order then was Biden, Sanders, and then here's the hit list. Buttigieg, Harris, Yang, O'Rourke, Booker, Warren, Klobuchar. Now that we purged everybody pretty much out of the way, 2 days ago it was a two-horse race between Biden and Bernie Sanders. Bloomberg was down the page. Warren was way down the page. Now it's pretty much, according to these betting markets, and this is not phony. This is not something that's like entertaining. This is something that's actually taking dollars and moving them into a market. Bernie Sanders is now second at 4-1, so 100 makes you 400 on Bernie. And if you still believe in Bernie and you're going to the UK anytime soon, you can bet on this. But Joe Biden, certainly, given what we've seen in the last 3 days, your last caller makes a great point. I think there were some people in the DNC that wanted to make some things happen and make Joe Biden the guy. He's certainly the guy. You don't go from 10-1 to minus 450. You never see that in any market. Basketball, football, politics, you never see that in such a short period of time.
Okay, I just want to counter that by saying, you know, this conspiracy stuff, this all happened before our very eyes. Biden said South Carolina was his firewall. He got the endorsement of James Clyburn. He crushed in South Carolina before our very eyes, knocked out Buttigieg and Klobuchar. They then endorsed him. This idea that there's a conspiracy behind all of this, I really bothers
well,
me.
Well, what bothers me is the word conspiracy, which is a word that Sam Panionovich did not use. But I think
right. I was going to say, I did not say conspiracy. I've been using the word purge. Usually you don't see this many people drop out before Super
Okay, but
Tuesday,
that's a different issue. But if it was a contract, even as it is, as transparent as it is, if Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar just said, look, we're not going to win, and if we therefore want our team to win, better we go with the candidate we think has the best chance of winning. Mainstream Democrats are not on the Bernie Sanders bus. I mean, it wouldn't require a conspiracy for this to happen. It just makes sense, I think, is the point Steve and I are trying to make.
Right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, and I understand that wholeheartedly.
I don't want to take issue with you, Sam, because other people have said it.
Sounds like you kind of are.
I know I am, but you said the DNC got behind something or something like that, and I just think, you know, that just, it's, the Buttigieg and Klobuchar, they're acting in their own best interest.
Okay, let's do this. It's 1027 on WGN. Let's pause here. We'll finish this conversation. We have several calls you'd like to get in. We'd love to hear from you. And also, in Chicago, where are the good places to go? The restaurant reviews with Phil Vitale are always fun. We'll do that after the news. Moments ago, we were having a discussion, I mean, an argument with Sam Panionovic. Sam follows the sports betting world. He follows sports and he knows wagering, and he's carved out a little bit of a corner for himself in that arena. So we go to him a lot when it's sports related. But lately he's been giving me updates on what the betting lines are for the political candidates, and where just a couple of weeks ago, Joe Biden was a 10-1. He's now the odds-on favorite. A week ago, Bernie Sanders was the odds-on favorite. And now Bernie is, he's fighting fast. So Sam is on line three. Lots of phone calls about this. We'll get to Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic, in a minute, too. Sam, you still on the line?
I'm still on the line. By the way, I came prepared with this nugget for you. So they reported that Mike Bloomberg spent about $700 million on the campaign. And he did win American Samoa last night. The GDP, the gross domestic product, in American Samoa is about $660 million. Right. Isn't that interesting how the campaign was $700 million and he just got American Samoa, which has a very similar GDP? I thought that was interesting. Maybe not.
Somebody pointed out to me that he could have just bought the place instead of trying to win the place. Okay, so here's the point of disagreement that we had, or contention. I don't even think it's a disagreement. But you were inferring, it sounded like, Sam, that what the Democrats have done is connive to get Mayor Pete and Amy Klobuchar out of the way and on Team Biden to hurt Bernie Sanders. Whatever is going on here, the markets seem to reflect Biden's chances, maybe in part because of that. He's gone from a long shot to now, does it look like he's going to win the Democratic nomination?
Yeah, very clear-cut favorite. Now, when we say Bernie Sanders was the odds-on favorite 2 weeks ago, he was only plus 100. So $100 wins you $100 back, so your 100 becomes 200. But Biden's price right now, it's a massive swing. And I'll tell you what, once he gets the official endorsement, and we know it's coming from President Obama, we know that that number will only jump even higher. So right now, Joe Biden to win the nomination is minus 450. That means you have to risk 450 to win 100. If and when he gets that Obama nomination or recommendation or whatever, endorsement, Biden will be about minus 700 or 800, and at that point, it's pretty much over.
Well, at least according to the bettors. I mean, Bernie Sanders was a really safe bet a week ago, and you can never know. But give me the order. So right now they're saying it's Biden, then who?
So Biden is minus 450, Bernie is 4-1, and then somehow Hillary Clinton is 30-1. I don't even know how that's a thing. Then you have Warren at 50-1, and Tulsi Gabbard is 500-1.
It's funny because Brenda and I took money out of our 401k and put it in the Tulsi Gabbard campaign, so maybe that wasn't a good move on our part. I don't know.
Do you think that the last word on some people's lips as they die will be Hillary Clinton?
I know.
She did it, or she's this, or she's that. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, she's been an amazing lightning rod or magnet for people. She and her husband, it's unique, I would say. All right. Any other wisdom as you look at your charts and graphs and maps over there, Sam?
Well, no other wisdom. I can just tell you that Ladbrokes also in the UK has odds to win the presidential election, and this is, of course, including the president. So Donald Trump is 2-3, which is minus 150. 150 wins 100. Biden is 2-1. Bernie is 12-1. And Warren is 100-1. Those are your odds to win the whole enchilada. Donald Trump about minus 150 right now.
Okay, but I mean, is 2-3 better than 2-1? So does that mean Trump has a better chance than Biden right now?
Yep, Trump is the favorite, so you have to bet 150 to win 100, and if you bet 100 on Biden, you win 200. So not a big gap yet, and who knows, maybe it gets closer and closer when we see how the polling data shakes out. But currently, Donald Trump just a slight favorite to win re-election in 2020.
Thanks for your time, Sam. We'll talk later.
You got it, King.
And you brought up a really important point. I mean, no one thought Joe Biden was going to be in this position 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And now everyone's giving him the nomination.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a lot of voting to go, and there's a lot of Joe that we're going to hear from. So,
not only does he have a long history, but he's talking a lot these days, and that's always interesting. Bob, you're on WGN. Bob, I understand you're listening to us in Seattle. Is that right?
Hi, John. That's correct. Yeah, I grew up in Wheaton, but have lived out here for a long time and enjoy the heck out of listening to you guys every morning on my smart device. And I heard your conversation with our local reporter here, Hannah Scott, and thought I could give you some perspective from just the average guy's perspective on this coronavirus thing.
You work at a golf course, right?
I work at a golf course, and since this thing hit, we've been pretty proactive about sanitizing and disinfecting and all that. We get a lot of international visitors. It's a pretty good golf course, so we're aware of the risks. But just the other day, we had kind of an eye-opener where the first responders to that nursing home, which has been the center of where all the deaths have taken place, or most of the deaths have taken place, they were quarantined, sent away from the workplace, sent away from I believe they were firemen, and they were out at our golf course playing golf the next day. And so we've pretty much accepted the fact that this thing is everywhere, and there's only so much you can do to prevent it. It's just a matter of, the washing your hands, not putting anything to your face, keeping some distance between other people. But we pretty much accepted the fact that it's all around us.
Well, then that kind of liberates you, doesn't it?
I guess to some degree. I went in to have my teeth cleaned yesterday, and I really felt bad for the people in the dentist's office that have to work in close contact with people.
Well, that's the thing. So if I may, Bob, so like we have a basketball team here that's afraid to go to your state, and yet in your state you have people cleaning each other's teeth. So it's kind of an interesting conundrum there about safety and precautions, isn't it?
Yeah, my wife and I had tickets to fly to Hawaii at the end of the month. We've been debating about that. Yeah. We're probably going to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
We've got tickets to the opera this weekend, and we're going to go ahead and go. But I feel for my youngest daughter is pregnant now, and my dad is back there in Naperville at an assisted living facility. And I really feel for those people because they... those are the folks that are really going to get hurt by this thing. So,
Hey, Bob, I got to run, but so nice of you to listen and help us out. Stay in touch. Call us every now and then, okay?
Will do, John. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us. John, my husband is sitting home right now, laid off. He's an electrician, works at McCormick. Carpenters, stagehands, and more are off. Hey, John, I just finished my workout at the health club. They have push-button faucets. I timed the duration, 20 seconds. Problem solved.
Okay, go back to the opera. That is in the dentist. That is amazing, I think, and such a thing for us to consider, right? They're kind of in, if there's a U.S. epicenter, he's in the U.S. epicenter.
Yep.
And he's going to the dentist. And
a dentist is cleaning his teeth.
Right. And the dentist is open. And we're afraid to, well, whatever we're afraid to do here.
It's 10:42.
I was just talking to Steve Grzanich. I'm sorry. He was going to the dentist, and he said his dentist had told him they're running out of masks in their dental office, and they might have to, like, close. I mean, they're running out of protective devices, in the office.
I'm still interested in what it's like at Disney World. I know so many people come and go. If you've recently come from there, could you just tell us what you saw, a normal day at the races, or was it something different? Did you see them making more efforts since it's an international attraction? I'm kind of curious what your observation was. The number's 312-981-7200. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. This is GN. Hey, Linda, this is John. You're on WGN. Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm very good, John. Thank you. I'm calling from Naples, Florida with a little bit of information because we don't have much.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, Florida's no more a fire than any other state. I mean, you're not Washington, but we were wondering about Disney World. What are you all saying down there?
I have heard that older people with pre-existing conditions are no longer going, and they've had lots of cancellations.
Yeah.
But we only have two cases down here. Our problem is getting information. When you call the Department of Health that's local for your community, you can't get through. We did have Albert Moscoso, who is the communication director for Florida's Health, tell us that I can't comment on any given epidemiological investigation. So Florida has a statute that anybody is, you're not allowed to get any information on potential cases. So just on Sunday, we found out there are two. Prior to that, there was complete and utter silence, and we can't get any information other than the two cases. One is outside of Tampa, and that was a 20-year-old woman that traveled home from North Italy. And then the other one is a man in Sarasota who is 60 years old who did not travel at all. That's very concerning. And we don't get a lot of information down here at all.
I'm sorry to hear
that. That's what's happening here.
Well, I really appreciate your help on that. And maybe you heard our conversation with the woman from Seattle who said that the big frustration in Seattle is not getting people treated that have it, but people that need to be tested. People now will go to urgent cares and pharmacies and doctor's offices. They want to be tested. They're not feeling well. Do I have the virus? I want to know. And they are not prepared for that. I hope that Chicago's people are listening to all of this. I suspect they are. I have a lot of confidence in what we're doing here. Linda, good luck to you. Thanks for listening in Florida. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune's on line 7. He joins us on Wednesdays. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good.
You're not in our studio today. You're well, right?
I'm well enough, yeah. No symptoms that have been discussed in the media at any length, anyway.
It's a good thing, though, that this isn't, I don't know, Restaurant Week is over, the International Restaurant Show isn't here, but you saw what happened to the Houseware Show.
Yes.
60,000
people. Well, the Houseware Show is an international show, and it gets a lot of exhibitors from China because, of course, that's where all the manufacturing is. So when the Asian market dropped out, it didn't leave the Houseware Show with a whole lot to work with.
Yeah. I literally saw, so they were playing clips, I think, on The Daily Show the other day of people's reactions to the coronavirus, and one of the news anchors asked the expert, is it safe to eat Chinese food?
And then sorry.
Yeah, you said somebody who doesn't own a Chinese restaurant, but I've called over there, and not only do you get the feeling business is off, but you get the feeling they're angry about it, and I said, come on and tell us about it, and they said, no, that would only make it worse. So they're kind of between a rock and a hard place, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
You online, I'm reading here, Chicago's Choice Dining Awards, Phil Vitale's Best Chefs of 2019. You've made a list, have you, Phil?
I have.
Now, this is different than the awards that you were talking about last week, right? We were going over the preliminary,
James Beard Awards.
James
right.
Beard.
No, this is Phil's list of, I don't care what James Beard thinks right now, this is my list.
Who's the number one chef in Chicago?
Right now, my chef of the year is Eric Williams at Virtue. He opened Virtue in late 2018, and in 2019, pretty much all he's done is get every recognition for best new restaurant that's out there in the world. He was named one of the best restaurants in America by Esquire magazine. He was named in a New York Times story as one of the 16 black chefs changing food in America. He just killed it all this year.
What kind of food do I get if I go to Virtue besides expensive?
It's actually not terribly expensive, and it's basically what you'd call Southern American food, what some people might be tempted to slap a soul food label on, but that's not accurate. Chef Williams was the chef de cuisine at MK Restaurant on Franklin Street for many years till the landlord decided that the property was more valuable without a restaurant in it.
Okay.
And then he opened a restaurant down in Hyde Park, and he's been just going great guns. He was never terribly well known outside the chef community when he was at MK because the owner, Michael Cornick, the original chef, he took all the oxygen out of the room, really. That's the name people knew. But now he has shown that he is absolutely formidable chef.
Number one is Virtue. Okay, so and that's Williams.
Yeah, got him.
Give me another one. Number two.
My pastry chef is Craig Arzewski at Brandy, which is on Clark Street. He also, prior to that, was the pastry chef at Naha until the Nahabedians closed that and plan to reopen a new version of that eventually. And he also helped create the pastry program at the Costali, which opened under the Mahabedian's direction earlier this year. He's just a terrific pastry chef. His stuff is... You know, people who stood at, right, drive you nuts at restaurants, all they do is take pictures before they eat the food. Well, when one of his desserts hits your table, you reach for the camera, not the fork. You want to remember that image first, and then enjoy the food.
Brindill, and that's Brindille, Brindille.
Correct.
Give me another one.
My rookie of the year. Fun thing about my list is I can change categories as I wish, is Mario Russell, who is the chef de cuisine at Kumiko Restaurant, and also at Kiko, which is the downstairs omakase bar underneath Kumiko. And she is, I went in there last year, and she just blew me away. Just the precision of her cooking, the way she matches flavors. And the nice thing about this is Kiko is an expensive proposition. It's an omakase. It's more than $100 a person. But upstairs at Kumiko, it's basically she has a lovely menu of snacks, and I don't think anything's more than $7 or $8.
Huh.
So you could still spend $100 if you eat every snack on the menu, and I say that as someone who's done that, but at one sitting. And I think I did doubles in a couple, to be honest.
How about that?
But it's great stuff, and then she matches her food is matched to the cocktails by Julia Beaumarchais, who is one of the wizards. Of the cocktail craft in Chicago.
Hold on, I want to mention a cocktail I had last night.
Okay.
It's over at Harbor again, that place on South Wabash I told you about a few weeks ago.
I gotta get over there.
I'm telling you, and it's weird because they're Manhattan, which is the house Manhattan, which is made with their own, they make their own sweet vermouth. I don't know how you do that, but that's what they do, is on tap. So I'm completely prejudiced against that concept. It's delightful. So I'm just throwing that out there for you, Phil.
Yeah, batched cocktails have become a big thing with restaurants.
It's easy for them, that's for sure.
For sure, it's easy because they can make it in batches, and it makes it a lot easier, makes it a lot faster to get a drink. And for as someone who has sat at a cocktail, waiting for my cocktail, while the mixologist holds a eyedropper,
I've seen this.
Over my drink, like
nonsense,
like on the bomb squad, like two drops is a cocktail. And three drops, the city blows up, and he's putting that kind of attention to it. I can appreciate the focus, but meanwhile, I want my drink. So, you know, order the batch cocktail first, and then watch the artistry for the next one. But the other thing is that people find that if you batch a cocktail, the ingredients have more of a chance to meld and form
a fuller
flavor. You know, like the way soup tastes better a day later after you made it.
Yeah.
Same kind of concept with batched cocktails.
I had their pizza there last night. I haven't tried the burger. The guy sitting next to me had been to Au Cheval, and he wanted to compare because he heard they had a great burger there. And I said, well, Cheval is known for the burger. So I can't comment on that yet, but good food there.
What did
last
he think?
Night. He was just getting ready to go, and I had to go to the game. So I'll have to report back to you. By the way, online, chicagotribune.com/dining, Phil Vitale's list includes Lem's Barbecue. So it's quite a range of dining chef awards that he's got for you online. In my ear, producer Olive said, you have to stop talking now.
I see. Can I talk for just one more second?
Yes.
And say, in addition to my list, on the same site at chicagotribune.com/dining, you will find we are also starting today our Reader's Choice Awards. So it is time for the people to vote on 15 different categories we came up with. From best new restaurant to best suburban restaurant to best Southside restaurant to best place for brunch, best steakhouse, whole bunch of names, and we will pick one voter at random, and they get to have dinner with me.
Well, I've never had that honor, so
I know.
Lucky.
Second place is two dinners with me.
Goodbye, Phil.
Bye bye.
Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic at the Tribune. Hi, it's John Williams. John, this whole coronavirus came about from humans eating snakes from that market in Wuhan. The snakes are predators of bats, and that was the original host of the virus. The amount of misinformation that's out there is pretty amazing. For instance, the notion that the coronavirus came from a laboratory that the Chinese have over there. They have a weapons-grade secret biological warfare lab near where the Wuhan virus outbreak started, and that this is clearly a case of that. I was listening to Lori Garrett, the science writer, who wrote about the coming plague, a Pulitzer Prize winner. Got her book at home. She's been on our show before, and in fact, I reached out to her, but she was hysterically busy. That is, so busy she was in hysterics when we called her. So I said, don't worry, we're good. Just do what you got to do, and I'll talk to you another day. But she has been talking about the misinformation that is out there on the internet, just on the internet, among other sources. And she said that with virtually every major viral outbreak, you've seen the list, and it's SARS, and it's MERS, and it's Ebola, and it's everything. There's always, always the theory that it's a biological warfare weapon that got away from the North Koreans or the Chinese or somebody like that. That's part and parcel of a virus like this. And it's hard to know what to believe.
Well, not always. I mean, I put some of the blame on the believers in some of these things.
Buyer beware.
Yeah. Wasn't there one with if you hold your breath for 10 seconds? Didn't you have a caller like that or something last week?
Yeah, it was a text from one of Elif's relatives.
You know,
it was a way to test to see if you have it. You hold your breath for 20 seconds and then you cough. And if it hurts, then your lungs are becoming fibrotic. And
yeah. OK, so if you believe that and you think that that's going to be your thing, some of that's on you.
I guess so. But I wouldn't be so harsh about that, Steve. I mean, I didn't know anything about anything until this all happened. And
I know,
do I know what I don't know?
I sent you an article from the World Health Organization yesterday, right?
Yes, you did.
Which we didn't know about. But that's the World Health Organization. So there's some credibility there.
Okay. And they said that it's okay to fly on airplanes.
Yeah. They said that actually you're not more likely to catch, because we always thought they were Petri dishes. And he said, the WHO said, no, that's not the case.
Okay,
But that was from a health organization. That wasn't from, you know, your Facebook group page in Elgin.
I know that, but think about that. So what if I read that smart information from WHO, and I put that out there, from the World Health Organization? If I put that on my Facebook page, you'd go, no way.
If you put it in the link where I could read the page.
That's bullcrap. John Williams said that. Have you heard his show? No way I believe that.
if you just wrote it in two lines of your own words,
well, I think
I'd be
happens.
Skeptical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, so what's the moral of this story? That we all need to at least start to cite our sources when we're laying some information out there. So the person who said they got it from eating snakes in China, well, just would you please give me your source on that? Because I don't even know that that matters to me, but I'd like to know what your source on that is. And I don't know what their source on that is, but I don't believe it. I asked you if you were in Disney World, if the lines are longer or shorter. We took a text message from a listener who's thinking about going to Florida, but since that's an international outpost in Orlando, they said they don't know if they want to go now. Somebody sent us a text message, and it says, John, I am here listening to us in Disney World, and the lines are plenty long. Here's what it says. John, I'm at Disney. It is packed here. Thank you, 708. Elif, didn't we get a text message, too? Did you see a picture of a line or something?
Yeah, and it said, if cancellations are happening, they're not here. By the way, why are they listening? Do they have their AirPods in or something?
If I'm at Disney World, I'm not listening to WGN, but some of you are. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's nice.
John, going to Disney World in 4 days, watching all of the fan sites, everyone is saying they are going on their upcoming spring break trips. Videos of today's opening day of Runaway Railway Show, a crowded park, not a face mask in sight, a plethora of Purell is packed. So thank you for the alliterations. The Runaway Railway Show, not a face mask in sight. Everybody's using their Purell. Disney is up and running. according to a few of our listeners. Thanks for the heads up on that. John just got back from Disney World. Normal Purell station saw less than 5 masks. Crowds were insane and very high. I presume they mean happy or crowded?
Yeah, it's not legal there yet.
We go often from Northern Illinois, and it was packed. Washed our hands more often, wiped more surfaces, but zero different than our normal trips. All employees we spoke to said they are in a cutoff there, but it sounds like it's okay. Well, that's good to pass along. Good to pass. Consider the source. Listeners to the radio show. I believe them. Tom, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air, Tom. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that the institutions have to be prudent, but I sense a panic. Yesterday, the Archdiocese came out with some guidelines for the churches, and we go to Mass this morning. They've emptied out the holy water fonts. They've taken away the chalice of the blood and then suggested that nobody shake hands with each other at the sign of peace, which most people kind of went along with. And, you know, I get that it's contagious. We've always had flu. We had pneumonia back in the day. There was polio. And I don't know that they've ever enacted measures like this. And to me, it feels like a sense of panic. And I think it's going to have longer cultural implications. I'm just speaking, you know, of the Catholic Church, of making people frightened.
So now no one's going to get sick, but you're all going to hell.
Well, let's pray our way out of that, but... You know, again, I know that they want to be prudent, but to me, it seems like panic, and it should be optional. If you don't want to take the cup, you're an adult, make your own decision. If you don't want to bless yourself with holy water, don't. If you don't want to shake hands, it's a sign of peace, don't. But to enact it, I think gives a sense of fear. That's my opinion.
Great call. Thanks for joining us. You have a good day, Tom.
You too. Thanks.
I remember when they first started allowing us to all drink out of the chalice in the Catholic Church. I was at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. I specifically remember the priest saying to all of us there at the center on campus, he said, "Now we're going to all drink from this chalice. If you're specially sick, you can pass. In fact, even if you're well, the Holy Communion you want to take, but you don't have to drink the wine. It's not an additional sacrament." But he also said this, the wine is alcohol. It kills germs. So the very business of us serving you alcohol and then turning the cup one half rotation and wiping it is a pretty good job of disinfecting it anyway.
Except what's on that cloth.
See, Mary,
that's
just...
That's what's always been with me. I've been like, oh, the cloth. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's 11:16. This is WGN. When you go to vote this year in Chicago on March 17th, or in Cook County, you're going to see Democrats, a few Republicans, and something called an independent Democrat. What is that? What does that mean? Coming up. All righty. I'm on the radio now. We're going to talk to you right now. It's 11:18. This is WGN. By the way, just lots of texts and pictures from people who are listening to us in Disney World. If you are listening to us in Disney World, stop listening to us. Go do Disney World. Get on a ride. Eat some cotton candy. Go stand in a line. I don't know what you do, but...
Come on. You can do both. It's a small world, after all.
Hold on a second. Now I got to... See, Steve, when you do that, I got to hit this button.
That was really good, Steve.
Hold on. Well, it's going to be a lot better if you can just wait 1 second here. Hold on. All right. Thanks, Elif. All right, Steve, I'm ready for it.
It's kind of nice. I mean, it's a small world after all.
Wait a minute. I'm not ready.
I mean, it's kind of nice. It's a small world after all. So worth it.
Chicago Sun Crimes the other day had a story headlined, "Sun Judicial Candidates Hoping St. Patrick's Day Will Be Independence Day." They mean independent candidates. A growing number of independent candidates, said Rachel Hinton, are borrowing from Cook County's Democratic playbook, banding together and using political tactics to try to win seats on the bench. And that is about the name and the place on the ballot. But I'm more interested in what an independent Democrat even is. Megan Millay is one of them, and she's in our studio. So when you go to vote on St. Patrick's Day, you'll see Megan. Nice to see you. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
You're running for judge.
I am, countywide, in the circuit court for the Larson vacancy.
So What is an? Are you a Democrat?
I'm a diehard Democrat.
Well, but will you be listed as a Democrat?
I will be listed as a Democrat.
Okay, but I thought you were an independent Democrat.
So what we call ourselves, my slate of candidates that I'm on with Aileen Bhandari, Jacqueline Marie Griffin, myself, Joy Tolbert Nelson, Michael O'Malley, Amanda Pillsbury, Elizabeth Walsh, Lorraine Murphy, and James Worley, we are all what we're calling independent Democrats because we are not... We did not go through that Cook County Democratic slating process.
So the Democrats of Cook County have not officially said, you are our candidate, Megan Mullay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, first of all, I didn't even know anything about that process. I am very apolitical. I grew up the youngest of six kids. My single mom raised us in Park Forest, Illinois. I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth. I had no political connections. So I was ignorant, I guess, to this whole Democratic slating process that apparently begins all the way in March, where you have to march around the county and meet committeemen, township heads, and aldermen. So that's when the actual Cook County Democratic slating process starts. I did not go through that, nor did most of my people on my slate.
Would you say that the position of you independent Democrats is different, or do you take exception to some of the things that the Democratic Party in Cook County is all about?
I believe it's different in the sense that the nine of us believe that politicians should not be picking judges. The people should be. And when...
But the people do pick the judges. We will vote for a judge, right?
Exactly. However, the Cook County Democratic Party has slated 13 candidates that they push in front of voters. And each of those candidates, if they are chosen to be slated, have to pay the party $40,000 just to be slated. Unfortunately, some of those candidates, they didn't even have their judicial bar ratings before the party chose to slate them.
We won't elect many Republicans on March 17th, typically.
I don't even have a Republican challenger in my race. So, no, we do not here in Cook County.
You are running for judge.
Correct.
What kind of judge is this?
Well, it will be a circuit court judge countywide. So I will be at the will of Timothy Evans, who is the chief judge, and he will put me in whichever division he chooses. However, because I have a 21-year background as a prosecutor fighting for the victims of violent crimes here in Cook County, I would hope that I could make it to 26 in California to bring my talents to the bench.
So for how many years were you a Cook County assistant attorney?
This is my 21st year.
You are a prosecutor?
I am currently a prosecutor.
What kind of cases do you normally prosecute?
Homicide cases.
Does that make you as a judge then a little biased because you are going to be more... you know, I'll say quote unquote for the victim, but maybe the guy who's being charged with the crime isn't guilty. But as a prosecutor, you're always going after that guy. How do you separate yourself from that?
I'm glad you mentioned that because that is often the misperception with prosecutors that do become judges. However, I want to tell you about me and how I've conducted my career. As a prosecutor, I have had the opportunity and the enjoyed the fact that I can get up in court and say Megan Mullay on behalf of the people of Cook County. So what does that mean? That means that it is my job to make sure that everyone's rights, dignity, and interests are protected in that courtroom. That means the victims. That means offenders, even. That also means the rights and interests of law enforcement and the community as a whole. So by having that holistic view of protecting everyone's rights, because I do not want anybody to be railroaded by any system. I want the system to work and be fair. So that will make a good springboard for the bench. I'm ready to become the arbiter. I've been the advocate. Now I want to be the arbiter.
Megan Mullay is in our studio right now. She's running for circuit court judge in Chicago, Cook County specifically. This is the March 17th on St. Patrick's Day we're voting, right?
St. Patrick's Day, early voting started. So don't delay. Vote Mullay.
I was going to say, you need a mnemonic device. You need to have something catchy if you're going to win in this town, Megan. And you also need to have an Irish name. I see Kathleen is on your button as well.
Correct. So my name is Megan Kathleen Millay. Millay is actually my married name. My husband is here with me today. And my mother's name is Kathleen. My mom is 100% Irish, and she was born on St. Patrick's Day. Huh. So when I found out the election was actually going to be on her birthday, this I took on the green and the orange and am proud to put my mom's name on there. But my name on the my law school grad, my law school diploma, the rolls of the circuit court and the Supreme Court has always been Megan Kathleen Millay. That's just my name.
M-U-L-A-Y.
M-U-L-A-Y. And my maiden name is Chaparro, C-H-A-P-A-R-R-O, because I'm also half Mexican.
Huh. Is your campaign, so you sound qualified to me, but is your campaign not just put this two decades worth of prosecutor experience on the bench? Is a vote for you also, I'm getting tired of the Democratic machine in Chicago? Is that a platform plank for you?
You know, it's interesting. That's not what it started off as.
Because you're an independent Democrat.
Correct.
You're not with the Democratic slate in Cook County.
Correct.
Okay.
And so it didn't start off like that. What happened was this group of nine wonderful people got together, and we chose initially to take the path of just helping one another out, getting signatures for the petitions. So we took, like you said, a page out of the Democratic Party playbook, and we put all nine of our names on one petition page.
Oh, I see.
And we banded together, and over the few months of collecting signatures, we collected over 18,000 signatures, and all of us made it to the ballot. We continued on with our work together by sharing our calendars, going to each other's events, getting our name out with one another, and we just proved that we could work well together. So we're a group of like-minded individuals. We have our own slate card that people can take into the voting booth with them. And these are people I support and that are like-minded, and we are just looking for justice for all.
You don't have to knock the all-powerful Cook County Democratic machine, and I don't hear you doing that.
Not at all. And I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I think they prove and serve a wonderful purpose, well, especially for some of the other races. However, it's my feeling for Judge, the air of impropriety of having to pay them $40,000 also works the other way for those wonderful candidates that they did slate.
That $40,000 is for services the party does to help you get elected, right?
Exactly.
Okay, and you either didn't play that game or didn't have that money or didn't want to do that, but you didn't get slated by the Democratic Party.
I did not.
Yeah. If you had been, you wouldn't be an independent Democrat then, right? Or would you?
Well, I wouldn't call myself an independent Democrat. No, I would just...
But it's that process that bothers you, too. The very fact that it's the Democratic machine that's going to slate these candidates rather than, well, I want a chance to vote for Megan.
Exactly, exactly. Unfortunately, there's been some situations where I've gone to events sponsored by the Democratic Party of Cook County where we're invited. They invite all candidates, and then I put out my palm cards or my election pieces only for them to get picked up and thrown away.
Oh, really?
Because I'm not a slated candidate.
You're not on their team.
And it's disheartening to me because I come from little means and I have little means, so this is a grassroots effort by all of us.
Okay, so you're the David, huh, to the Goliath?
Yes, I'm the David to the Goliath, and David wins. And
oh, that's right. And David did, didn't they?
Yes.
Didn't he? Won't you? Well, we're out of time. Will everybody in Cook County get a chance to vote for you, or is it by districts?
Everyone in Cook County will see me on the ballot. Can I throw in one more thing? This is for my brother-in-law, Chris Anderson. The Bears need a new O-line. Sorry.
He just wanted that to be out on the radio somehow.
He did. But please vote Megan Kathleen Millay on St. Patrick's Day. Go to my website, MeganMillayForJudge.com. Go to my Facebook page, Megan Millay for Judge, and you will be able to see the nine wonderful candidates that I am running with. And I do respect the Democratic Party, but in selecting judges, there should be no thumb on the scale of selecting judges.
Independent Democrats, you'll see some of them when you go March 17th. Nice to meet you, Megan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Megan is still campaigning in our studio. You have to go away now, Megan.
Okay, I'm leaving.
Is she campaigning for office or for the Bears O-line?
I know. She had, you know, you get your one shot in the studio. And her brother's like, if you don't make a call, I mean, God bless you. We need fair judges, but we really need an offensive line. So I'm all for that. It's 11:34. This is WGN. John Williams in the studio. You can call or text all show long. The number is 312-981-7200. We're leaving coronavirus land, although I don't think we're going to get away from it. But as we get more information, as we hear more anecdotes, I'm happy to pass them along. And I'm, you know, I shouldn't favor one side or the other. Everybody's making decisions about their travel and their investments on their own. But I, if you've been listening to the show, know that I'm kind of leaning into, yes, travel. Yes, stay calm. Yes, don't pull your money out of the markets. Stuff like that.
Peter Greenberg was on with Anna yesterday. Same thing, talking about the deals you can get.
That's what I'm thinking. Our next guest is on line 7. Okay. 312-981-7200. And a lot of you are continuing to send us texts, at least, from Disney World, where you are listening to us for reasons that completely mystify me, and I'm hearing that the crowds are good, and it seems to be pretty safe at Disney World. So thank you for that. Yesterday, I don't know if you were listening at this time, but we had on, I thought, a terrific guest, an attorney from Naperville, who does not want to see Naperville selling pot legally, selling it at all. Now, what's happened? It was illegal everywhere. Then the state of Illinois said it is legal everywhere. But certain communities can say, no, we don't want it in our town. So you'll find one town has pot and the other town doesn't have pot. And maybe somebody puts a shop right on the border, sort of the way they sell firecrackers in Indiana, for instance. Naperville said, okay, we do not want, the city council voted against legal marijuana sales there. You cannot buy recreational weed in Naperville. And now there's two groups, the ones that want that changed and the ones that want that to stay the way it is. In fact, on the upcoming March 17th ballot, it's a non-binding referendum, but the people will get a chance to vote and at least tell their city leaders, well, here's what we want. And the two points I think our guest was making yesterday was, one, she doesn't like what it's going to do to their town. Naperville is one of the great places to live in America. It's prosperous, it's clean, it's efficient, it's a great place to raise a family. And the idea of having pot shops downtown really bothers her. She doesn't want to talk to her kids about the legality of that. She just doesn't like what it does to the image. The other thing is, she says the founding fathers in Naperville say that, the leaders there say that it's going to make them hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And she said, actually, if you do the math on it, we might make, in a given year, in tax revenue, $130,000. Oh, it might be a little bit more than that at first. The rate will look good, but it'll level off. And she said, if you extrapolate from what's happened in Washington and Colorado, for a town our size, we could expect about $130,000. Is that worth it? Really? $130,000? Particularly when you consider the increased costs of maybe policing or whatever. She said, I don't know that it's even going to be a net positive. Okay, so that's the people that want them to opt out, but there's a group that wants them to opt in. It includes the mayor. Steve is the mayor of Naperville. And Steve, I know your name, but I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Is it Chirico?
You got it.
How are you, Steve? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well. Thanks, John. How are you?
Good. How's business in Naperville these days?
It's booming. We are it's a very vibrant city. This morning I had a meeting with the Chamber of Commerce going through some of the upcoming economic development projects, and it was a ton.
How, you voted originally to make marijuana legal in your town, right?
I did, yes.
You vote with the city council.
The sale of marijuana.
Yeah. What do you make of your opponent's view on this? You just heard my summary of her objections. What do you say to all of that?
Well, you know, most of it is emotional. I mean, from a practical standpoint, there's just no reason to prevent the sale of marijuana in our town. We're going to, and I don't quarrel with some of the comments about the cost to society. Certainly there's going to be some, and I would argue that we currently already are experiencing that with or without the sale. It's legal. And so my point is that if we're going to have to deal with some of the negative consequences of legalizing recreational marijuana, then let's take advantage of some of the positives, which would be the revenue stream is one. And then also from a, you know, from a municipality standpoint, if you opt in, then you maintain control and authority. We can control zoning rules. We can control things like hours of operation and on-site consumption, these types of, you know, enforcement and compliance. And so this is all really important. I mean, I would prefer to maintain that control so that we can continue to have a high caliber of you know, responsible operators and put it in locations that we think are the most favorable to the community.
The other side says you're just not going to make the kind of money you say you're going to make.
Well, I think that's proven out to be pretty clearly an incorrect statement. We've been using some very conservative numbers. The number from your guest yesterday was just pulled out of, you know, thin air. They're using Colorado, which, you know, here Colorado was the first out of that gate with legalized recreational marijuana. And, you know, they admittedly made a lot of mistakes. And one of the things they did was they really flooded the market with tons and tons of licenses, and that put people in operation who really weren't good business people, and so that caused one set of problems. But when you look at the when you add that many licenses to an area, what does happen is that you'll reduce the sales per location, right? You dilute the market. Illinois has released 130 licenses, so we're twice the population of Colorado, and we have about 20% of the licenses. So what they're doing is they're taking a number from a unit revenue in Colorado of $135,000 and saying this is what you're going to do in Illinois. And it's just not apples to apples. Right now we're running at about $1 million a month per dispensary, so $12 million a year. And if you just use that to begin with, it comes out to about $570,000 per unit, per location, mm-hmm. per year.
Yeah. So I don't know, and that number's worth it to you. I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's not just the revenue, but $570,000 is the amount of money you think your town would net if you had legal pot stores, right?
For each store.
Yeah. What about the image of the town? I mean, if anybody should be concerned about that, you should. She thinks it hurts the image of the town.
Yeah, I think that's a fallacy. Again, I think that that's just these soft arguments that, you know, using, you know, fear, basically, to try to get support. I mean, when you look at year after year, the top 10 best places to live in the United States, these cities, 8 of the 10 have legalized sale available in their community. And so it's, you know, I don't think Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Plano, Texas, or, you know, I mean, these cities that are just well-known and very well-respected throughout the United States, they don't have any image problem.
I don't know if this matters to you, Mayor Steve, but she made an interesting point yesterday, and that is where pot stores are legally operating, the illegal business, the black market business is still there because they don't have to charge taxes. They can actually undercut the local businesses. So you're still going to have the crime, and it's going to hurt revenue. I'm just kind of interested in the landscape of this sort of thing and what you think about that. Pick it up here with me in a minute. This is WGN. Some of you are texting or calling in about Naperville. So just to keep score on this, Mayor Steve Chirico's on a phone line from Naperville. He's one of the people advocating that they opt in. Yesterday, this time we visited with somebody who said we should opt out. But Steve, it was illegal to have a pot store in Naperville like it was across the state. Then the state said it's legal and everybody can do it. Then your town voted no, we're not going to have it. And now there's a non-binding referendum coming up saying, okay, but maybe we could ask the city council to look at it again and vote for legal pot stores. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny to me because, I mean, like we said earlier, you're a voting member of the city council. It seems to me like the city council has already spoken. So what would change on March 17th?
Well, Well, there were a couple, at least two, maybe three council members at that time who wouldn't take either position. They didn't want to vote on opt in or opt out. They wanted more time, and ultimately it was because neither side had a majority of the votes to win, and so it was sort of a compromise position that we would say, let's go ahead and opt out for now, mm-hmm. and let's put this to the voters.
Mm. So do you think, while it's non-binding, will this be persuasive? Do you think the council will go the way the vote goes?
I believe so. Most of the city council, maybe even all at this point, has said they'll honor the vote.
Yeah. Okay. Joellen, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to know. I've seen reports that the tax revenue and what are the mayor's plans? Are they going to be invested in new education, mental health programs? What are the plans?
Thanks for the call. Good
sure.
question. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a good question. Usually what happens is a portion of the new revenue stream is dedicated. It's one of the reasons why they have found that communities that opt in, the use among teens actually goes down. And they attribute that to the fact that some of the new revenue oftentimes is used towards education and prevention. And so just like with alcohol and cigarettes, we've seen for the last 15 years teen use go down. Due to the education portion of it, and we believe that that's what is causing that in these states that have opted in. So my guess is that at least a portion of the new revenue would be dedicated to that. Certainly police training and equipment, that money is available through the state portion of the taxes, but for special enforcement, there may be a reasonable expectation.
Maybe, but none of this is earmarked per se. Is that right?
Not yet. No, because we're not opt-in yet.
What's the budget for your town?
We have a $125 million general operating fund.
$125 million. So if you even say you did get $500,000, $500,000 is what we were talking about, right?
Correct.
So that's a half a percent, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
It's not a big portion of your... I guess my point is... take the money, but it wouldn't change life in Naperville much, would it?
Not really, not tons. But, you know, John, our total property tax for residential and businesses for the municipal portion is $24 million. So think of it that way.
Say that number again.
Yeah, our total municipal property tax across the entire city of Naperville is $24
million. Okay, so okay? Is the point then that this is a larger percentage of that number, half a million to 24, does get noticed. Is that what you're telling me?
Very much. And I think that we're really looking at closer to, you know, north of a million, certainly, if we have our proportion of licenses.
Well, in some way, would this alleviate property taxes in Naperville?
Well, I would certainly hope so. That would be the intent, from my perspective, at least. You know, we do have societal costs. We talked about that, and some money should be dedicated towards, you know, trying to offset that. But then also, I think, tax relief.
Would you favor zoning those stores away from your very popular downtown?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's undeniable. I think even the members of the city council who are all opt-in all say, we want to control zoning. You know, nobody has advocated for, and I would be shocked if anybody would ever consider advocating for zoning in the downtown or really any strip mall in neighborhoods or anywhere close to schools, daycare centers, churches, things like that. It's just not going to happen.
Charlie had a question on line 5. Charlie, you're on WGN. What was your question or comment? Hi.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good.
A friend of mine's on Chicago Police Department. He said that since we have legalized marijuana in the state of Illinois, the guys on the street can't keep up with the demand.
How's that figure? What's going on there?
It's a lot cheaper to buy it from a dealer than it is to go from the store.
Yeah, you know? because they're not paying taxes, right, Charlie?
I don't think they are, John.
Okay, unless they're counting it as income. But yeah, so the illegal market is, people are already smoking marijuana, Steve, in your town of Naperville. They're going to continue to do so, maybe from their current sources. So the idea that you'd control the market that way is maybe not so sure. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair comment. There's currently a black market. There will continue to be a black market. But I would argue that every dollar spent legally is a dollar not spent illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, many people, I believe most people would prefer to be law-abiding and given an opportunity to purchase, even at a higher cost, doing it legally without that risk of incarceration or, you know, is, I think, worth it. And so, but that doesn't mean that everybody will. You're right. People will continue to, just as people buy cigarettes illegally today.
John says,
tax-free, or alcohol, this illegally.
This texter says, John, ask the mayor if his son is in the recreational pot business and if he will be involved in Naperville's recreational pot business.
Yeah, my son, Austin, is a 12-year resident, currently a resident of Colorado. He's in the medical cannabis field and has been for many years. It's one of the reasons I know quite a bit about this. But no, there's no conflict. There's nothing in Illinois that he's involved with, or you know, in the recreational or the medical at this time.
He has no plans to operate a shop or have any interest in a shop in Naperville?
Well, I have no idea what his plans are in the future. I can tell you that right now he is a resident and has been in Colorado for a number of years. So,
I can't imagine that the two of you haven't talked about this, and there's no intimation, there's no, hey, Dad, if it's legal, I'd like to operate a shop there. You guys haven't had a conversation like that?
My son works in a supply company, which supplies, you know, soils, chemicals, fertilizers, fans, lights, things like that. And he has talked about the opportunities throughout the country, Oklahoma being a potential opportunity because of their how they are moving forward with this so quickly, and some of the other states. And Illinois certainly be one, his family is here, that he would consider that. But, you know, there's been no plans for it, and he could do that today. He doesn't need Naperville to opt in or opt out for that. And so that, you know, and quite frankly, he doesn't need Naperville to opt in or opt out if he wanted to do work in the medical or recreational field either. It's legal in Illinois.
I don't know anything about this association with you and your son or his business, but you know what the other people do. They say, well, his son's in the business, and if Naperville goes legal, then I'll bet you his son will have... he'll be selling lights and soils to the operator in Naperville.
Sure.
I'm just giving you a chance to dissuade us of anything there.
You know, whenever a group or organization has a weak argument, they always go to three different tactics. You know, attack the personal character of the people, the other side, use fear, and use misinformation. And your speaker yesterday checked all three boxes. You know, they try to imply that I'm in conflict, which is nonsense. They spread information about the tax revenues, which are baseless, and they put things out there about that cannabis stores are going to open in the downtown or cause all sorts of crime, and which is completely inaccurate. We've never talked about allowing that. So that's the whole tactics that will be used when you have when you don't have good facts.
Steve Chirico is the mayor of Naperville, and on the 17th, they will get a chance to, in a non-binding referendum, vote on whether or not they want to, in fact, go back and make a pot store legal in their town. And, Mr. Mayor, the last thing I'll just note from our conversation is that you think that the city council will go the way of that, the vote on that, huh?
I believe they will, yeah. I mean, a number of them have already committed to that, so depending upon the will of the voters.
Okay. Hey, listen, good luck to you. What a pleasure to talk to you. Let's visit again down the road, and we'll follow the vote very closely here on WGN.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Mayor Steve. Why do I get the feeling a lot of people are going to vote in the primary in Naperville just to get on that referendum? Ji Suki's down the hall. Steve Bertrand is getting ready for WGN Radio News. Ji, what are you going to do?
Hi, John Williams. By the way, that was fascinating. I like how you presented both sides of the argument there.
That's what we're trying to do.
I know.
I'm glad I'm not the decider on that.
I'm glad I don't live in Naperville. Okay, so we're going to be talking with Terry Savage. I know. Go ahead. Give out the number, 312-981-7200. She's in the first half of the show, so you want to go ahead, call in, text in early, so that way she can get to your question.
Yeah, it's been pretty zany. What's the market at right now? Do you have it in front of you? The Dow, last I saw, was up 5-something.
I have, it just changes by the second, you know. I have it at 678.
Wow.
Is that right? I don't know.
No, I'm sure that sounds about right. Yeah.
Let me refresh it and make sure.
Well,
668 now. Oh, my goodness.
You could do an entire show like that.
I know.
It
would change by the second,
the
and that would be
ball.
Riveting, right, John?
No, it's actually good that Terry's coming on.